that we have Mr. John Regacious here, who is a former Little League coach and former high school coach.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
How you doing, guys? Thanks for having me here. I teach chemistry in the science department. For a long time, I worked at Brownsburg Schools. And like I said, I was an assistant baseball coach there. I coached at the middle school level, coached the JV team for a couple of years. I've coached Little League in Brownsburg. My kids have gone through and coached Little League there. And had the fortunate experience while I was coaching baseball in Brownsburg to work with a couple guys who, you know, played in the major leagues.
There's the meat of it. Interview done.
So, John, we got some questions for you, and then we can get you back to your class after this period. So, you've coached at the level and of obviously having the I'm trying to think of the word the
future MLB star
have the blessing today. Of you know how did you get into baseball and coaching really.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I grew up in Northwest Indiana, went to Crown Point and, you know, played baseball, badly up in Northwest Indiana as a kid and as a high school student.
What position?
Outfield.
Outfield, and, same. Right field, left field?
A little bit of both, both corner right. Outfields. It wasn't fast enough to play, you know, center field. Yeah. so, left-handed, so I couldn't go anywhere in the infield. Right? So.
Wait, we're all lefties in here?
Are we all left-handed?
Yeah. I didn't even know that about you, Owen.
Yeah. Oh. I didn't know that about you.
You didn't?
No, I thought you were right-handed.
We've known each other since, like, elementary.
I don't know.
Weird, okay.
So lefties all
Yeah,
here?
So then after I got out of college, I was interested in teaching, interested in coaching, and was fortunate enough to get hired at Brownsburg High School as a science teacher there. And the first year that I taught there, which was 1999, and they had an opening at the middle school. They didn't have an opening at the high school coaching staff. They had an opening for a seventh grade coach at what was then Brownsburg Junior High School. And so I got hired for that position. And it was interesting because that was the group of kids. It included Lance Lynn, who has played in Major League Baseball for the last 10 years or so and 12 years and currently pitches for the White Sox.
Was he one of the Golden Glovers? No, that would be Cy Young.
That was Tucker. He did.
Tucker Barnhart won Golden Glove as catcher. Lance was third in the American League Cy Young Award this past year pitching for the White Sox. But so that group of kids, he was in seventh grade at the time, and that group of seventh grade kids was the first group from Brownsburg who went and competed in the Little League World Series. Mm-hmm. So Lance pitched in the Little League World Series, and those guys were in sixth grade going into seventh grade that summer when it happened. And so, you know, all of a sudden here I was, and I was 24 years old at the time, and all of a sudden I was coaching this group of kids that had just gotten done playing in Williamsport at the Little League World Series that previous year.
Oh, you guys went to Williamsport?
Now, that group from Brownsburg did. I wasn't.
You were in that group.
That I was the seventh grade baseball coach.
Okay,
so,
got it.
So Gary King was the coach, and he passed away a few years ago. He was the coach of that Little League team that in the summer, like between their sixth grade and seventh grade year, they went to Williamsport and played in the Little League World Series. But then I was in the spring of the seventh grade year. I was their first like middle school baseball coach.
So you got all these kids coming from playing with kids from all around the globe, and going to Williamsport, being on TV, and then you're like, welcome to middle school baseball. This is where you start your kind of professional career.
That's
almost.
Right. And with no assistant coach, and it was just me and, 15 kids who'd had a lot of success and went on to have a lot of success. They ended up winning a state championship a few years later in 2005. We were state runners-up in 2003, 2004. So 3 years in a row, they which was that group of kids, sophomore, junior, senior years, that they played in the high school state championship game.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have a question, and I really hope your players aren't listening right now. looking back on them now,
mm-hmm.
thinking back to when they were playing with you mm-hmm. and you're coaching them, did you realistically ever think that they would ever make it to the majors?
So I think that that's a really hard thing when you're talking about kids in middle school and in high school.
Yeah.
To be like, oh, this is a guy who's going to be a Major League Baseball player. All three of them were unbelievably talented baseball players. I mean, Lance, when he was in seventh grade and eighth grade and all through high school, was just a dominant player. Now, Lance was kind of a physical specimen. I mean, he's, today he's 6'5".
He's a big guy.
Right. I mean, he was big when he was in seventh and eighth grade. So we would play teams in seventh grade baseball, and he was just, physically the most dominant player that was there. So you always knew that he was going to be really good. But you also have at that age, you know, when kids are 13, 14 years old in middle school, there's an aspect of, well, are other kids going to catch up to them physically to some extent? And he always just kind of stayed bigger and stronger than a lot of kids, threw harder than anybody did. And, you know, he was Mr. Baseball on a 35-0 team.
Wow, for real.
You know, in 2005 when Brownsburg won the state championship. You know, you look at a kid like Tucker Barnhart, and I was never actually Tucker's high school baseball coach. Mm-hmm. I was out of high school coaching. I ended up going to athletic administration and became the athletic director at the middle school in Brownsburg, and then eventually I was the AD at Danville High School for about a decade. But you know, Tucker was he didn't have the size advantages that, let's say, Lance. And Tucker's about 5'11". I mean, mm-hmm. he was kind of a small kid in high school, and he was a catcher. But I remember Tucker was in sixth grade, so he was 12, and we talk about like little league. So 12 years old is like that's the little league group where you go through and get to, you know, you make your run in the Williamsport tournament. So Tucker was probably the best player in that class, definitely was the best player in that class when he was 12 years old. So as coaches, we kind of knew who he was and mm-hmm. knew he was coming up and was a really talented player. And I just remember we were having our summer baseball camp at Brownsburg High School. You know, we have little kids come in and they pay, you know, $25 or $30 to work with the high school coaches for a couple days. And so we had Tucker, and he's playing shortstop, and he's 12, he's in sixth grade. And I'm hitting him ground balls on the big diamond. You know, he's playing Little League on a 60-foot diamond. And
over there,
we're at the high school, playing on the high school 90-foot diamond. And I'm hitting him ground balls at shortstop, and he's throwing across the big diamond to first base. And I was the JV coach at that point for the high school. And I'm watching him field ground balls throw across the diamond. He's a 12-year-old kid. And I'm like, that kid right there, he would be the starting shortstop on my JV team with high school sophomores. Mm-hmm. Like, he's that good at 12 years old. So you knew all of those guys were really talented, but it's a pretty big jump to go from, hey, even for a really, you know, dominant player, Lance Lynn went to Mississippi and was like I said, was Mr. Baseball, to go from there to being like, hey, I'm going to compete for the American League Cy Young Award at some point a few years down the road.
Squirrel, do you mind me cracking open this can of Diet Coke?
Of course, Jeff, yes, you can.
Thank you.
So I do have a little story for you that I never got to personal experience. I just heard this from my dad as a story. So a couple years ago, or I say a couple, I mean like 13, 14 years ago. I think 13 years ago, early 2007, he got sick. And he got like really sick. He had to go to the hospital. He came back, and one of the nurses is talking to him. And she's like, yeah, so you're watching, he had baseball on the TV and was like, oh, so you're watching baseball. Like, my son's pretty good, you know, He's a pretty good pitcher, you know. And my dad is like, oh, this lady, she's just, or not my son, my grandson. And he's like, oh, this lady, just any other person. And it's like, and like I said, 13 years ago, she goes, yeah, he's pretty good. He goes to Ole Miss. And my dad goes, did your grandson happen to be Lance Lynn? And she goes, yeah, that's his name.
Yeah.
So it was pretty funny.
You're
because
kidding.
No, it was.
That's crazy.
It was funny because, you know, like, oh, my grandson's really good. He's, and then everybody, you know, every grandma says their son's or her grandson's really good at baseball, you know?
Yeah.
And then happens to pitch it at Ole Miss and then find out it's Lance Lynn.
Well, there's different levels of really good. There's the sentimental and then, like, you're actually good.
Right, right.
You're the sentimental Owen. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Man, okay, don't Jeff. Cry. You didn't have to do that to me. But, so that's my little story with Lance Lynn. I've never actually met Tucker Barnhart, but his dad, or I forget his dad's name. Do you?
Kevin. Yeah. Kevin. So actually, my oldest son is a high school junior, and Kevin is a travel baseball coach, and is
with
is
the
my,
Expos.
Yeah, yeah, right. And my son plays on his team with the Expos.
I think I saw you because I was last year when we played Brownsburg. I was in the.
Oh, okay.
Are you talking Indiana Expos?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The minor. Yep. Okay. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. That's Bill Sampin runs that program.
Yes. My 11th period teacher has either a kid or a grandkid in. Or on the Indiana Expos.
Okay.
Yeah, I know a couple kids. I know lots. I think I know at least four or five kids that play high school baseball at the Expos, and you know they're all members of the Hack Shack.
Yep,
and,
sure. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I know Kevin. He's done a lot for the community.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, 100%. Yep. And you know he's worked with my kids, you know, hitting and things like that since they were little kids.
Yeah, and I believe he like subbed at schools one time or something like. I think my mom worked with him or something.
Right, he's originally a Ben Davis guy.
Yeah. Jeff, do you have any further questions?
Further questions? I don't think so. The only things that I can relate to that, Ben Davis, we now have a Bengals fourth Ben Davis student that's been to the Super Bowl now. Congrats to congrats to the tight end from Cincinnati, Chris Evans. We love him. Yeah. And then that makes him our fourth. And then substitution, Cardinals player too. He substituted for a during Josh in the middle of the lockout. He substituted for a elementary school gym class. He said he enjoyed it, but if he had a career change, he's not going into that.
So I think we're gonna go to a quick break here and then get your takes on kind of the MLB news lately with the lockout and everything. So you're listening to On and On Monday on Indy's Giant 90.9.
Hey there, it's Mike Rowe. And if you're out there getting dirty, do me a favor and remember to call or click 811 before you dig. And when I say dig, I refer to any activity requiring boring, tilling, drilling, probing, reaming, plowing, drudging, or even scoping. Anything that causes you to roll up your sleeves a little and dig in requires you to first connect with 811 so that you can avoid all those buried pipes, wires, and cables underground. To sum up, call or click 811 before you dig and visit safeexcavator.com for more information.
My mother was always very active and independent, and she was familiar with her neighborhood. But one day, she stopped at the stop sign for much longer than usual. She wasn't even really sure where she was at.
It's important for you to talk to someone about it. I felt so much better after my son told me, "Mom, we'll figure it out."
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Thank you, the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the On the Mountain Monday, and we're here with John Regatius. And John, we kind of want to get your takes on the MLB news lately with the lockout. How do you think, or when do you think, and how do you think the lockout is going to end?
Well, you know, I mean, there's, I guess, been a little bit of positive news that at least the two sides have met, I think, in the last week or so, and there's maybe a little bit of progress, you know, moving towards that. You know, I'm old enough to remember the strike in 1994, you know, and that went into 1995 and really impacted both of those seasons, canceled the World Series in 1994. You know, there's people that are my age in their, you know, late 40s, early 50s that, you know, never came back to being baseball fans because of that. And so I hope that the leadership of both sides kind of understand, you know, what's at stake and that they don't relive or recreate the mistakes that were made in the past in the 1990s you know, with canceling games and the resentment that I think that there was from baseball fans for a long time after that.
Okay, so which one do you think would have to be worse now, just from what you've seen so far with the current lockout? Which one would you have to say, 1994 or 2021 or 2022?
Well, 1994, I mean, they canceled the World Series. I mean, you know.
Well, but they still had games played. Granted, they were pulling players from, like, Double A.
Well, that happened at the start of 1995. So that went into the 1995 season. And so when they got into spring training, they used some replacement players. And it wasn't for regular season games. It was spring training games in 1995. But in 1994, when they got to August and they had the strike, And the players went on strike. That was it. I mean, it was the middle of August, and you know they were 3/4 of the way through the major league season. The season was canceled. They didn't finish it. There was nothing. I mean, and you had guys. You know, Ken Griffey Jr. was in the prime of his career and was on pace to hit 61 home runs and break the home run record. And then you kind of look at what ended up happening with McGuire and Sosa,
Barry Bonds.
You know, Barry Bonds a few years after that. And you kind of wonder how that might have played out if the record had gotten broken back in 1994. Tony Gwynn was on the verge of hitting 400. His batting average when the season was canceled was in the 390s. I mean, he had a realistic shot of hitting 400, which nobody's done since Ted Williams did it in 1941. And so, like, you know, there were really good pennant races. It was the first year of the wild card system in Major League Baseball. You know, I'm a White Sox fan. You know, we've talked about Lance. Lance plays for the White Sox. I grew up in Northwest Indiana. I've been a White Sox fan my whole life. They were in first place. You know, they had Frank Thomas, who had an MVP season. So, you know, that was really hard for White Sox fans, who it was like the White Sox hadn't won the World Series in 70 years at that point, and they were one of the best teams in the American League. And then it was just pull the plug on it, and it was over.
I'm trying to stay quiet over here. I'm your local Cubs fan, so. But I'm trying to and even our director over here is a White Sox fan too.
Yeah, Mr. Easter. We've been I've known him for We went to IU together for a long time. He's a good White Sox fan. He's a good IU guy. I'm sorry that he hasn't been able to.
And then I'm also a Boilermaker, too.
Yeah, I'm sorry he hasn't been able to do enough work on you to get you on the right side there.
No, right side.
So you were talking
about. You had your 2001. Or 2004,
2005. 2005.
Close enough. Close enough.
So thinking about the Barry Bonds, I heard you were talking about him. And he finally got snubbed in his final year of being eligible. I believe with him not being posthumously inducted into the Hall of Fame, how do you feel about that situation?
Yeah, I think that's a really tricky thing. You look at the guys who, have issues with performance enhancing drugs from the early 2000s, and you got Bonds, and you got guys like Clemens.
I forgot about Roger Clemens.
McGuire, and all those guys just were in their last year of eligibility for the baseball writers for the Hall of Fame. I understand it. I know that there's people who want to kind of pick that apart and say, hey, Barry Bonds would have possibly been a Hall of Famer before he was ever even involved in any kind of performance enhancing drugs. I understand that. I generally believe in the process of how they elect players to the Hall of Fame, that it's you have to have the percentage of vote that you have to have. 70,
but it doesn't go down 70, to the
70, 75.
It doesn't go out to the public though. It goes to
to baseball writers. Yes, correct.
It's a pretty high percentage to get in. I mean, obviously, you have to be very, very good. But I believe that Barry Bonds is he's one of the greatest hitters, even without the PEDs. Now, I don't think that the PEDs. I think that PEDs did help him, but at the same time, if you get a terrible hitter and you go to PEDs, obviously he's not going to automatically smash bombs.
He might drop. He might jump from 100 to 175 to 25 if you're lucky.
You get a guy who just comes up in the AAA whatever and does that, but obviously with Barry Bonds, he already hit tanks,
Oh, he was a all-star and MVP caliber player in the late 80s when he played for Pittsburgh in the late 80s. But I also think that you take guys who are very good and now you turn them into the best player, possibly the best hitter of all time. That's a difficult thing because I think that what they did was wrong. I mean, and so it doesn't bother me that there are baseball writers who say, I'm not going to vote for that guy who had distinct advantages when he played. It doesn't bother me that there are a significant number of writers who feel that way. And I think that that's part of the process of you have to get that certain percentage in order to get elected.
Two questions. Do you think because he was on steroids and PEDs, do you think that should revoke his record amount of home runs in a single season, 68? And I can't remember what my second question was going to be. You go with that one.
I don't think you can do that because I don't think you can start wiping out games and statistics from games. I mean, those games got played.
Yeah.
I wish that baseball had a better testing process, during that time. I wish that Bonds hadn't done what he had done. I wish, Roger Clemens hadn't done what he had done. I for me growing up, Roger Maris had 61 and Babe Ruth had 60. And there's always been controversy, right? That was a thing for a long time because Babe Ruth played in a season when he had 154 games. And Roger Maris played, after they expanded and had expansion and the season went to 162 games.
Yeah.
So he played more games than Babe Ruth did when he broke Babe Ruth's record. And so that was kind of always the thing. Oh, will anybody ever hit 61? Will anybody ever hit 61? So when you had McGuire and Sosa and they did it, and then Bonds, McGuire hit 70, and then a couple years later, Bonds hit 73. But all of that was done under the skepticism of, performance-enhancing drugs. I think that's really a shame because now it's kind of like nobody looks at it and goes, oh, is somebody going to be able to break the home run record this year? Because nobody's come close to 73, and it'll probably be the record for forever.
Now, do you think during the steroid era, though, you said he had an advantage because he was on PEDs and steroids. Do you think it was an actual advantage, though, because of the fact that I think pretty much any MLB player in the majors would be able to have access to them? Because you have MLB teams that try to develop the best type of pine tar and sticky stuff for players. That comes completely free of charge. It comes complimentary with the team. Do you think that... I believe there was a few teams that were doing that with steroids where they were able to offer it to the players if they so wanted to. Do you think because almost every MLB player had the opportunity to give them an advantage?
Well, sure. I mean, I think that anybody who used performance-enhancing drugs were you know, at a pretty significant advantage. Again, you know, Bonds was a guy who was an all-star, you know, excellent player, and he's hitting 40 home runs, but he goes from 40 to 73. I mean, you know, and you know, you look at McGuire. McGuire was a super power hitter when he played for the A's in the 1990s, and he's a guy who went from hitting 30, 40 home runs to he hits 70. So, you know, you look at a guy like Roger Clemens. I mean, most pitchers, you know, they get to an age where they're in their upper 30s, you know, 40 years old, and it's hard to compete at that level. Yeah. He got better by the time he was 30. You know, think of the longevity that it increased some of those guys' career. Same with Bonds. Bonds' best years were in his late 30s. I mean, that just doesn't normally happen to players. I mean, players are typically in their prime in their late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah. Well, I can hear the bell going, so you have to get going soon. I have one more question that can just be really quick. Since you are a White Sox fan, World Series, Minnesota versus Cubs, who are you rooting for?
Oh, that's, you know, I mean, the World Series is in October, so football season would start at that point, so I might have to think about that. I would, without a question, I would root for Minnesota if they were playing the Cubs in the World
Series.
Oh,
they're your rivals. They're your division rivals. Right?
It doesn't matter. Cubs. I grew up in Northwest Indiana with White Sox fans and Cubs fans. True story, in the 2020 season
that was
shortened because of COVID, you know, the White Sox and Twins were competing for the American League Central title, and the Twins had to play the Cubs in an interleague game, like in the last week or two of the season. That really would have been beneficial for the White Sox if the Cubs had won those games, because the White Sox were competing with Twins for the division. I couldn't do it. I couldn't bring myself to root for the Cubs. Even when the Cubs beating the Twins would have without a question distinctly helped the White Sox to possibly win the American League Central.
Okay, well, thank you so much for coming on. You're our first interview so far on the show, so thank you. Round of applause to you.
Yeah, that's something I can.
Thank you.
I can always take that with me. Then I appreciate that.
Well, you go and get to class.
All right. Yep. We're gonna go. We're gonna go talk about naming covalent compounds here in chemistry.
Have fun
stuff.
We're gonna go to a quick break. Later.
I think we're just gonna keep it short today, and I think that's the end of the episode.
Okay.
So thank you to Mr. Regatius. Like I said. Like Jeff said, having the first interview on here, so thank you for that. So
you're going down. You're going down on the Mound Monday in history.
Yeah, all right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
No problem.
All right, so we're gonna go to a couple breaks here and then come back on Indy's Giant 90.9.